927, I'm Jeff. You're listening to The People Speak. Talking today with Senator Terry Bryant. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Jeff. Thanks again for having me today. Enjoyed doing these monthly talks. Mm-hmm.
I think last month it was the weather was a little warmer than it is today.
I think it was a little warmer, yeah. Today's not too bad, though.
No, but I mean, looking at the forecast, if it holds, I'm seeing a 60 in there probably about next Wednesday.
So. Yeah, we might be complaining it's too warm.
True. It makes you wonder, you know, yeah. In February to have this kind of weather, what's the spring going to be like?
Yep.
So, just briefly before we take a break here, some of the things we'll talk about.
I think we'll talk a little bit about the economy in particular. I know that people are struggling right now to pay their energy bills. In fact, I kind of say, you know, we're at a point in the economy where you have to choose between eat or heat. You know, when we get into the summer months, it gets dangerous for senior citizens and so forth who maybe don't have air. But right now it's dangerous for everyone in the, you know, expectation that at some point, because we have so much ice down here, right. That we'll have, problems with, you know, ice bringing down power lines. But we didn't anticipate, or I should say I spoke on it, but many people did not anticipate the meteoric rise of energy prices right now. And I know it's hurting folks. So let's talk a little bit about that this morning.
All right. We'll go ahead and take the break, get that out of the way, and we will come back and talk with Senator Terry Bryant here this morning. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back. Again, The People Speak here, and Senator Terry Bryant, our guest today. And Senator, we talked, you said the economy, that's something that's obviously on everybody's mind right now.
Yeah, you know, we just started a new legislative session. So we've been in session for a total of about 3 weeks. And only actually been on the Senate floor for maybe less than an hour total. I'm not laughing about it because it's ha-ha. I'm just laughing because, you know, it's government is frustrating and it moves very slowly. But the reason I'm mentioning that is I was just appointed the minority spokesperson of the Energy Committee. So it'll be Energy and Public Utilities. And in speaking about the economy, we see, you know, obviously you go to the grocery store and eggs here are not $9 a dozen, but they're certainly $6 and $7 a dozen in some places. And, you know, many times senior citizens are eating eggs as their protein because they can't afford meat. But at the same time, you're trying to figure out how do you pay for these increased groceries? You're getting slammed with an energy bill that is two or three times more. Now, a lot of the listeners to this station might be on a co-op, and so perhaps they haven't seen it yet, but I will tell you it's coming, and it's coming for everyone. So we're working hard to try to figure out how do we reduce those costs. The reason I say that about the co-ops is your municipality may have contracted with an energy provider through a co-op, and those contracts, a lot of them ended last spring. Some ended this past September. But if you haven't seen your energy bill go up yet and you're on a co-op, it's likely it will go up around April or May. So because those contracts will be coming to an end and the co-op has to, you know, contract again to get that energy. And so we need to do something pretty quickly. I've joined a couple other legislators right now who are going to we've put a letter together that we intend to send to the ICC, the Illinois Commerce Commission, to ask them for emergency relief for ratepayers. In this case, it's for Ameren because the Ameren customers went up right away like last spring. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, where if you've paid $100 a month for your energy, you're probably paying $200 or $300 now. Well, that got Ameren's attention. We have a good relationship with Ameren for the most part. Got their attention. I did talk to them this week, as did Senator Chapin Rose, who's kind of heading this this move up. And we're going to see if we can get some immediate relief for people. Now, there's going to be a lot of talk about the bill that passed about 3 weeks ago that took away local control on the wind and solar. Mm-hmm. So Randolph County, I know it's been a huge issue because people don't want solar put on private farm property, and then you use up all that good farm property. I've maintained that I think it's a private property owner's right to make that decision. Mm-hmm. And so you encourage the local municipalities or counties to pass ordinances that help to control it. If the people of Randolph County want something a certain way, then their county board should have the opportunity to pass ordinances that reflect that.
Right.
In this case, the state has now taken that out of the hands of the local governments, and they've established statewide standards, and everyone has to meet those. So if there is a municipality or county that that passed an ordinance or has standards that are more restrictive than the state, then they have to go back and change those. I think that's just wrong. I believe very strongly in local control. In these conversations, what's going to end up happening is we're putting a lot of money into solar and wind. We've taken away a lot of that money that we were putting into coal, and that's affecting us.
Mm-hmm.
But this solar and wind standards that I've just referenced, in that bill, there's a component in it that, good grief, Jeff, I just lost my train of thought for a second. There's a component in there that allows $200 million to be given to Ameren customers for rate relief. Now, the trick in all of this is that it's subject to appropriation, which means that the legislature has to appropriate that money into the budget. So it's a little bit of smoke and mirrors, mm-hmm. right? The money's there, and everybody will be talking about it, but it's not there. There's the ability to get it. My question when this bill came into committee was, well, what about places that have co-ops? What about those who are Peoples Gas and Nicor Gas? None of them are included. It's just Ameren customers. Well, you know, I represent a large swath of Ameren territory, so we want to get them some relief. But that $200 million will give people $25 or $30. Your energy costs might have gone up, as I said, mm-hmm. $100, $200, and it's only for Ameren customers. So in the last, what was called ICEJA, the energy bill that will eventually close Prairie State, in that particular bill, was a whole lot of money that is earmarked for wind and solar and forces some of this to happen, but not for the coal. And so, again, I'd rather have $25 in my pocket than in Ameren's, but it's a flash in, it's a flash in the bucket, right? So we have to do better. And so that's what we're going to try to do for folks, is find the money to either to do some rebates to customers on, that are on Ameren or co-ops,
mm-hmm.
or to, find a way that we can regulate or deregulate the energy companies so that they can. I know that's a whole lot of right. information there, but the main thing is we're trying to get people help on their energy bills.
Right. Yeah, I know definitely. I've talked, here at the station, it's gone up probably, 50-60% from what it was. So,
I think the alarms went off when we saw businesses beginning to close. And there was a, grocery store in Kincaid, which is up by Springfield, that just shut their doors. We have restaurants that are closing their doors right here in this region simply mm-hmm. because of the high cost of energy. And let's face it, I went to McDonald's the other morning and I got a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit, a coffee, and hash browns, and it was over $9. So, and that's reflective of the cost of eggs and the increase in minimum wage.
Mm-hmm.
All of those things drive the economy, and even though there are individuals who will, laud the idea that we've raised the minimum wage, it's trickle down, right? So when you raise minimum wage, when you have inflation cause the price of eggs to go up, all of that turns out in your pocket. Time and time again, we hear from people, I make more money than I've ever made in my life,
mm-hmm.
but I'm more in the hole than I've ever been in my life. And so it's clearly we have super smart people who live in this area. It's not rocket science. Obviously, if inflation outpaces your income, then you're going in the hole every single day. And the fact is that when you go in the hole, you never recover that for the rest of your life. So we need to have an energy policy. We need to have an economic policy in the country, but in Illinois in particular, because we are often doing things in Illinois that reflect New York and California, or we are reflecting what New York and California are doing. Mm-hmm. Our governor has clearly said he wants to be the most progressive governor in the United States, and he's clearly not just headed in that direction, but taken us in that direction, whether it's abortion, gun control, or our economic policies, and that, you know, and that it also is in our energy policies.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's scary, I actually heard his name mentioned the other day on a national program when they were talking about potential 2024 presidential candidates. And
I have no doubt that he is, I hate to say floating a balloon these days because everybody will jump right on that, but I'm sure that he is, I'm sure that's the plan. Mm-hmm. I've not heard that from his own mouth. But, you know, I've been in politics for a long time. I've been in government now for a long time. And the fact is that I would be shocked to find out that he is not moving in that direction.
Exactly. I'll tell you what, we got another commercial break here. Let's go ahead and take that. And we will come back and talk some more with Senator Terry Bryan here on The People Speak. We'll be back right after this. Hey, we're back. Got a few minutes left in program here, talking with Senator Terry Bryan. We were talking about the economy, talk a little bit about energy issues as well. Of course, one of the things you mentioned, too, was the tentative closing of Prairie State and, of course, Baldwin plant up here, too, as well. I mean, that's economy-wise, that would be a definite hit to this area.
So Baldwin is closing. Mm-hmm. I wish that, you know, I don't think that's news to anyone. It's scheduled to close in 2025. They're going to transition from energy generation to battery storage. Mm-hmm. So they'll roughly go from employing, I think now it's 130 people maybe, down to around 20. I get some calls periodically from people who work there that want to know where they might be able to go and apply for a job. Baldwin is a little bit different than Prairie State in that Baldwin Power Plant, the folks that originally built that by taking land through eminent domain.
Mm-hmm.
Eminent domain came up recently because in that new ICEJA bill, the Illinois Energy Bill, there is a for-profit private company that is now allowed to petition the ICC to take land through eminent domain from Champaign going west through about six counties. So it makes me nervous. So in regard to Baldwin, I am filing a bill that would basically says that if you have property taken through eminent domain for a specific purpose. In this case, Baldwin was taken to create an energy generation facility.
Mm-hmm.
Before the ICEJA bill, you could only use eminent domain if you were a government entity, a municipality, a county, the state, for the good use of everyone, right?
Right.
So it's the greatest public good. Because we now have this situation where the camel's nose is under the tent on this private for-profit company, I'm nervous about that. So my bill just basically says that if your land was taken through eminent domain and the original purpose of that taking is no longer in effect, that the original owners or their descendants would be allowed to purchase that property. They would be given 3 years to do that. So I don't know yet if we can make that retroactive to Baldwin. But certainly in the future, we don't want to see something happen again. Well, we had a lot of folks from here in Randolph County, and some of them jumped on board and sold their land because, you know, it was going to be good for the property tax, you know, the tax base and all of that mm-hmm. stuff. So they sold. You know, it's a shame that it's not going to be energy generation anymore. But to those whose land was taken through eminent domain, that's a crime. In my mind, it isn't right now, but I hope to make it that way, you mm-hmm. know, so at least in civil court, they would get their day. So we're going to work on that. But I did want to say something kind of funny to you, Jeff, right before we went to that break, I said something about a balloon.
Uh-huh.
My son, our son's 29, has a beautiful wife, brand new twins that we talked about last month. So they're mm-hmm. just over a month old now, but we can punk him sometimes. So when the balloon was going over, I posted on my social media site, you know, really a Chinese balloon, shoot it down. I meant for the government to shoot it down, right? Some other folks were, you know, kind of gigging me a little bit, you know, reminding me that it was 60,000 feet up and so forth. It did fly, literally flew, came into Illinois airspace at the beginning of the 58th Senate District, up around Columbia, came all the way across the 58th Senate District and exited Illinois airspace on the other side, over by Evansville, Indiana. So I had a dog in this fight, right? Mm-hmm. And it literally went over my house. Well, my daughter-in-law saw the post, and she punked my son just a little bit and said, hey, you better get back down here. He was making a delivery in Chicago. He works for a company out of Anna. And she said, you better get back down here. Your mom is out trying to borrow a 30-06 to shoot that balloon down. And I had to laugh when she did it, because I got a phone call from him 30 seconds later. Mom, you know that thing is up 60,000 feet. You can't shoot that down. But I did think it was kind of funny that I might be out there actually trying to do that.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm not crazy, but I can be crazy fun sometimes. And I wish they would have, by the way, wish they would have shot the balloon down when it was in Montana or when it was in Alaska. Now we're fishing around for it in the ocean. Still haven't found all of the parts that we need. I do think that, you know, I know we're here to talk about state government, but on the federal side of this, you know, they just discovered that many of those parts were made by American supplier, I believe. Or let me take that back. English-speaking supplier, because the parts were written in English. And whoever that supplier is has ties with the Chinese government. Now, that's already established. That's not out there as some social media, you know, crazy thing that's out there. That's actually accurate. So it'll be interesting to see in the end who that company is, what those ties are to the Chinese government. I do believe that it would have been a little bit smarter to shoot it down over land and in an area that was not as populated as, say, when it was going over the St. Louis area.
Right.
There's plenty of Southern Illinois area. As I just told you what that swath was that it went across.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely no reason why it couldn't have been shot down somewhere over between Alaska and Indiana, for that matter. You know, it didn't have to go on further. And I think one of the things that got lost in all of this conversation was it really split the difference in the way it traveled between Fort Leonard Wood in Missouri and Scott Air Force Base. Scott Air Force Base, not just a large employer, but they are a major air defense wing for United States defense.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm pretty salty about the fact that they allowed that balloon to get as close as it did to Scott Air Force Base. We're also hearing that it had capabilities of listening. So I'm pretty sure they were not listening into my humble abode in Murfreesboro. But what were they listening to coming out of Scott Air Force Base, or coming out of Fort Leonard Wood, or coming out of the other five military bases that it went over, or our nuclear arsenal? So I think there's a lot of questions to be answered by our own government.
Mm-hmm.
So they need to give us answers.
Yeah, it's like they said, that they didn't want to shoot it down over a populated area. Well, there was plenty of unpopulated areas that it went before that.
Yeah, let's invite them down here to Randolph County. I think there were plenty of places that they could have shot it down anywhere in the 58th Senate District that would have not had us fishing in the Atlantic Ocean to try to find the major pieces of equipment that we need to look at to see what the Chinese were listening to while they were going over major airspace across the continental United States.
Right. And the other issue, then they say, well, at least it didn't get back to China. It's like, no, but I mean, with the technology of today, they were monitoring it the whole way and getting data collected the whole time it's flying over.
Absolutely.
They've already got a lot of the data.
Yeah, they said they blocked that they were able, when I say they, I mean a spokesperson for Department of Defense said that they were able to block it, but I don't know at what point it was blocked or how thorough it was blocked. And again, those are questions that need to be answered. Maybe you can get Congressman Bost to come on the show and give us whatever he's able to do. He's, by the way, you know, I'm a big fan of Congressman Bost, and he now is the chairman of the Veterans Committee.
Mm-hmm.
Very good assignment, something I know that he's very passionate about. And we, you know, with all the veterans that we have living in this area, including the Anna Veterans Home, I think that's going to be a real positive for Southern Illinois as well.
Right. Yeah. In fact, he is scheduled to be on next week.
Oh, great. Well, then you can ask him those questions.
Right. Exactly. Definitely will. So any we got about a minute or so here. Any final thoughts?
Well, let's very quickly. I'll give people an update on where the gun bill is. You know, I think we have now 4 temporary restraining orders issued at the state level. Mm-hmm. Remember that those temporary restraining orders are just what they say. They're temporary till it gets to court. And they are also only for those who are named as plaintiffs. People call me and ask, how can we get into a case that would be for my county? Because they seem to be county specific. Mm-hmm. I would tell folks, you know, if you want to get into those lawsuits, go ahead. But that's at the state level. I am supporting the suit that was filed in federal court. That's going to be heard in March in Benton federal court. I'm hoping that we get a temporary restraining order at the federal level, and that will mean that it would be for the entire state. So Rick and I personally are putting our personal money into that suit. It's going to take about $1 million. I didn't give $1 million. We gave a couple hundred to this suit that the Illinois State Rifle Association and the National Rifle Association. And then there are some individual plaintiffs mentioned in that. So there is a federal lawsuit that will be heard in Benton in March, and we're hoping for a temporary restraining order at the federal level. And we'll keep pushing.
Right. So, all right. Well, we're out of time, but I appreciate taking time to talk with us today. And we will look forward to next session of the
Senate. Well, we're in session now. Okay. So we'll go back on I'll go back Monday for Tuesday session. And we should start running some bills at this point. There's probably 10,000 today's the deadline. So we'll know today how many there are between the House and the Senate. I think there's about 10,000.
All right, Senator Bryan, thanks for being with us. And that will wrap things up. We will talk to you again on Monday. Have a great weekend.